This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, July the 25th, 2014. Hello and a very warm welcome to you for this week's edition of the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. We have extracts for you from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending Friday, 25th of July, 2014. And this week our editors have been Gordon and Liz Legg. If you have any problems with your recording, please contact Irene Dowding on 01962 870370. That's 01962 870370. And this week your readers are Claire Porter.
Hello.
Robin Freeman.
Hello.
Gerry Tuff.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter for today, Ros Lydiard. Well, we'll begin as usual with the main headlines, which this week's are: damning report into care homes failings, Hugh's Eatery will be a celebration of food, and boy rescued after foot tangled in rope. Claire, let's have the first headline story for the care home.
Damning report into care home's failings. Inspectors have warned a Winchester care home to make drastic improvements following a second damning report. The Care Quality Commission found that standards at the 64-bed St Cross Grange care home were unacceptable, and some of its patients, including dementia sufferers, were at risk of malnutrition and dehydration. Others complained of being left unwashed, while staff put residents at risk by failing to manage their medication. The report also told how 5 residents had died between February and April this year. The health watchdog made a surprise visit to the home, where it is understood a room costs in the region of £1,000 a week, over 2 days in May. Inspectors failed it on 8 aspects of assessed care, with enforcement action taken in 5 categories, including the care and welfare of residents and managing of medication. The report said inspectors found that an allegation that a care worker roughly handled an elderly patient had not been referred to Hampshire County Council's Adult Services safeguarding team, as it should have been. An incident of alleged abuse had not been managed safely to protect people until prompted by our visit, it said. Systems were not in place to ensure management and staff learnt from events such as accidents and incidents, complaints, concerns and investigations. This increases the risk of harm to people. The report said that 18% of the home's residents had been hospitalised at the same time, mostly due to illness, this spring, and 5 residents died between February and April. It was not clear that this rate of deterioration in people's health had been adequately identified, investigated and reviewed, the report said. This meant people were not adequately protected from unsafe care and support. A new manager has been brought in since the inspection to bring the running of the home within statutory regulations. Other failures outlined in the report included the mismanagement of residents' medication, putting people at risk of harm, dementia patients at risk of having their movement around the home unlawfully restricted, residents losing weight and in danger of malnutrition not being correctly monitored, people put at risk of choking because of a failure to follow protocol, failure to turn bed-bound patients frequently enough, with evidence of one elderly person not being turned for 9 hours. Residents at risk of dehydration, with records for one person showing they were not offered drinks between 1 p.m. on May the 15th, 2014, and 8:30 a.m. the next day. The report also recorded how the care home's employees did not feel supported by their management system and felt overworked. The home in St Cross Road failed an inspection by health watchdogs last year after it was found not to meet 10 essential standards, including safety and leadership. Earlier in 2013, former manager Anne Taylor was struck off by the Nursing and Midwifery Council after allowing a 94-year-old patient to choke to death at the home in 2009. A statement from owners Greensleeves Homes Trust said it took the points raised in this report extremely seriously. St Cross Grange Care Home is completely committed to the welfare and well-being of its residents. We have implemented an action plan and are working closely with them and the local authority, it said. We have met the agreed deadlines for action and continue to work towards returning the home to full compliance again. These actions are being taken in consultation with residents and their families. We are also providing additional support for the home through our experienced head office operations team, as well as from our most experienced home managers. We are committed to ensuring St Cross Grange will again be fully compliant in the near future. A spokesman for the Care Quality Commission said that the care home will be inspected again in the near future.
Hugh's Eatery will be a celebration of food. TV chef Hugh Fernley Whittingstall has celebrated in Winchester the latest addition to his restaurant chain. Mr. Fernley Whittingstall and his team from River Cottage accepted the keys to Abbey Mill from the mayor, Eileen Berry, at a ceremony on Monday. Raised glasses of elderflower sparkling wine marked the official handover from the council following months of renovation. The chef's plans to open a restaurant in the city were revealed in October 2012 and faced opposition from nearby residents. Since permission was given, the council has spent £1 million on renovation. River Cottage has said a further £750,000 will be spent creating its fourth canteen. Councillor Berry said, "We welcome you wholeheartedly to our city because lots of us have followed you through your career and we like your early dedication and the fact that you haven't lost your vision. It's a vision we want to stay here." Mr. Fernley Whittingstall, renowned for his commitment to locally sourced produce, said, "The council has risen to the challenge at every turn and gritted their teeth and got on with the job. To see this place now with its vistas, we feel now the building has taken shape. It's a great moment to turn this place into a place of celebration of food at the heart of this community. We will do this to our very best, the very best of our abilities. You have challenged us to be here for a long time, and we will absolutely try to do that. It feels like today we have arrived, and we're really looking forward to the job in hand." Councillor Steve Miller, portfolio holder for Business Services, thanked the hard work of the builders, architects, and planning officers. "The partly open plan, former mill, will have an open kitchen, bar, a private dining area and staff area, as well as the main seating room when it is opened in time for the last week of September, creating at least 35 jobs. It will also have an outdoor space facing the park near the sluice. But the works have not been without their problems. In February, the river, which runs directly under the lower seating area, rose into the building." Kevin Warren, head of estates at the council, said, "We had a really difficult time when we were doing the works. Water was pouring through the wall and we were having to pump it out every 20 seconds. I'm extremely pleased with the outcome. Despite objections from nearby residents in Colebrook Street, River Cottage's managing director, Rob Love, said the team had worked hard to ensure concerns had been addressed. "We've worked closely with the residents, and they've been really friendly towards us," he said. "Like a lot of people in Winchester, they're worried about car parking and traffic. We have to work hard to make sure any concerns they have will be addressed. I think they'll recognise that, and that they have been very supportive. What has been difficult is, because of the amount of building works, we've not been able to speak to them as much as we'd like to, but they'll see more of us as the weeks roll on."
Boy rescued after foot tangled in rope. A Winchester boy almost drowned after his foot became tangled in a rope while he was playing at Compton Lock last Sunday. Joe Chilcott was swinging from the sluice, then jumping into the water in a bid to cool off, when the accident happened. Mother Lucy said that 9-year-old's leg became entangled and he was unable to hold himself out of the water. She thinks he could have died at the very dangerous place if a passerby had not gallantly jumped in to save the St. Peter's Primary School pupil. Joe released the rope, but for some reason it got wrapped around his ankle, and he very nearly drowned, said Mrs. Chilcott, 40, of Wentworth Grange. "Thankfully a man jumped in the water and saved him. I've no idea who he was, but I want to say thank you." She's now calling for signs to be put up to alert children and their parents to the dangers of playing in the water at Compton Lock near Shawford, to stop another accident occurring at the popular swimming spot. Mrs. Chilcott said she had contacted the council directly and was advised they were looking into the issue as a matter of urgency. "I think it's my duty just to see if there's any way they can put a sign up," the mum of three said. "It's a very dangerous place. I'd hate it if this happened to anyone else's child." Russell Robson, Waterways team leader for the Environment Agency, said, "All watercourses contain hidden hazards and must be treated with caution. We would like people to enjoy the water, but to remember some basic safety points when enjoying rivers and coastal areas. Children must be accompanied by an adult, and swimming should be confined to recognised swimming areas, pools and lidos."
Thank you all. And we have death notices now, and that will be followed by Christian comment, which will be from Claire, as usual. Excuse me. Alan, Frederick Donald Alan, peacefully on the 11th of July, aged 80.
Boosmans, Derek Boosmans, formerly of the Bridge Department, Hampshire County Council, on 17th July, peacefully, aged 85.
Dunning, Peter Donald Dunning, suddenly on the 17th of July, aged 77.
Edmund, Pam Edmund, 12th of July, aged 85.
Hill, Irene Marjorie Hill, aged 104, peacefully on the 19th of July.
Hoskins, Cyril Dunn Hoskins, known as Squirrel, very peacefully after long illness on 17th July, aged 76.
Pilgrim, Phyllis Pilgrim, in her 90th year, peacefully with her family on the 20th of July.
Terrell, Glyn Terrell, on the 11th of July, aged 57.
Winning, Jean Winning, on the 18th of July. And we're going to have Claire now reading Christian comment, please.
Which this week is written by Rowley Riem, and he has headed it, "Tourism is more than an outward journey." Going to a concentration camp may not be everyone's idea of a holiday, but over 1 million tourists travelling to Poland choose to go to Auschwitz every year. There they witness the world's greatest experiment in inhumanity, as they face piles of shoes, suitcases and human hair left by the extermination over 1.5 million Jews and other undesirables. I'm not exactly looking forward to it myself, as I fully expect to be overwhelmed by the visit. Even reading about Auschwitz in preparation for the trip has been harrowing. But tourism should be more than going to other places for recreation or pleasure, and being cocooned from the harsher realities of life. Our travels around the globe are just a diversion, unless we are prepared to make an inward journey also. The split that has opened up between tourism and pilgrimage has been to no one's advantage. Pilgrimage has come to be seen as a solemn affair for people of a certain age and background, while this was far from the case. Chaucer's Canterbury Tales reminds us that friars and nuns mixed with tradesmen, cooks and squires. Tourists prepared to be pilgrims combine the best of both worlds, a sense of adventure and fun with the desire for deeper learning. That is why churches and castles form such a significant part of the holiday diet. Travelling through time as well as space offers insight and knowledge to satisfy our natural curiosity and love of learning, and even children can now be drawn in to these sites thanks to the new emphasis on story and interaction. A big slice of the recent lottery fund grant to Winchester Cathedral is being spent on developing the stories that will connect with the greatest range of people possible, including those of other faiths and none. One of them, for example, will ask how Winchester contributed to the birth of a nation and leave us to ponder our own place in its life. An important question as Scotland decides on its future. Tourism is certainly more than an inward journey. There are also outward journeys to the ice cream van and the beach to fit in. But engaging with what is likely to be more difficult and challenging will bring us a sense that our spirit, as well as our body and mind, has had a good vacation also. And that was written by Rowley Rehm.
Thank you, Claire. And that brings us to letters to the editor this week, and there are no prizes for guessing the popular topic of the week. It's Silver Hill, I think. If you start off, please, Robin.
And Rosie Tatham of St James's Terrace in Winchester says, "Please listen to the people. Re the Silver Hill development. I have 2 points to make after the heated defence of Winchester's historic heart. Design, legal and financial advice is only as good as those chosen to offer it. Why not use those responsible for Bath's successful new city centre buildings? How can it be that this project is so barely profitable if every spare inch of Winchester is being built over with great alacrity by other developers? Please, can Winchester City Council listen to its people? Rosie Tatham, St James's Terrace, Winchester."
And the next one on the same subject comes from Edward Fennell and is headed, "Underused Brooks Should Be a Lesson." The aesthetics of the proposed Silver Hill development may be open to debate, but it is hard to fathom the argument for substantial new retail space when the Brooks Centre is woefully underoccupied. The only possible rationale for increasing the volume of shopping space in Silver Hill is that the Brooks is so unappealing to retailers that it is, in effect, not fit for purpose. If that is the case, then the time has come for imaginative thinking about how the empty shops in the Brooks can be re-energised and turned to good account in another capacity. There are plenty of heritage, social, arts and cultural uses to which the Brooks' redundant spaces could be turned. So here's an opportunity for the proponents of Silver Hill on Winchester City Council to show that they can intervene to salvage one failing project before embarking on another. Edward Fennell, Egbert Road, Hyde.
This letter from Neil Hyman is headed Paying Lip Service to the Past. The Silver Hill development pays lip service to the history of Winchester by referring to the layout of medieval streets. But beyond that is monolithic, dictatorial, mediocre in detail, and seems to have been dreamt up in a mood of blind optimism. Seeing past the architect's sunlit impressions, imagine the effect of an inadequate take-up of retail space, as prefigured by the Brooks development next door. Winchester and the 21st century needs an environment less grandiose, more varied, and above all, conceived with more imagination than the current scheme. Neil Hyman, Monk's Road, Hyde.
And still on Silver Hill, Michael Lupton of Main Road, Littleton, says, repeating failings of the past. It was clearly most unwise of the City Council to tie themselves so firmly to Henderson. One might have thought that the Council would have learned lessons from their earlier experience on the dreadful Brooks development. The Silver Hill area certainly needs redevelopment, but the bulk of the building is obviously far too great. There are numerous vacant shops on the High Street. Where is the need for another shopping mall? Malls are largely in decline now due to online shopping. Undoubtedly, housing is required, and affordable housing at that. But this does not comply with the developers' wishes to maximise their profit. There is also a great need for smaller housing units in Winchester. The council rightly requires all developers to build a percentage of their schemes as affordable, or failing that, to make a substantial cash contribution. It is reported that Henderson wished to avoid this and threaten collapse of the whole scheme. If this is correct, the whole scheme is not viable and needs to be completely rethought. Why should Henderson avoid their obligations to provide social housing, and why should the council accept this ultimatum in defiance of their own regulations? Michael Lupton, Main Road, Littleton.
And this one from Michael Carden is a sort of sideways slant on Silver Hill. It's about people's reactions to modern buildings and is entitled Anyone for a Bacon Sandwich? Your correspondents on the subject of modern architecture might like to know that they're in very good and equally colourful company. Not one of our lately erected buildings has been the object of more general, unqualified and invidious censure than this. W.H. Leeds of the National Gallery in 1838. Nests of monstrosities, vile enough in point of design, all have the appearance of having been erected from hasty, unrevised sketches. They display tawdriness and show. Contemporary criticisms of Nash's Regent Street terraces. There is here a complete travesty of noble associations, and the architect is therefore a mere expensive rival of the company's head cook in catering for the low enjoyments of the great travelling crowd. Contemporary criticism of St. Pancras Station. The whole thing, as far as architectural expression is concerned, is the most colossal gimcrack that's ever been seen. A criticism of Tower Bridge, 1895. A gasometer and a water tower. Contemporary criticism of Westminster Cathedral. It is the ugliest town in the universe. Horace Walpole, referring to Paris, 1765. But my personal preference is for... To say this is a good bacon sandwich is only to say that by the criteria applied by like-minded lovers of bacon sandwiches, this one is worthy of approbation. The word good is reducible to other properties, such as crisp, lean, and unadulterated by tomato sauce. You will have seen at once that to a man who likes his bacon sandwiches underdone, fatty and smothered in ketchup, this would be a rather poor bacon sandwich. And that was from the play Jumpers, written by Tom Stoppard. And the writer of this very entertaining letter is Michael Carden, MBE, AA DIP, RIBA, Vice Chairman, City of Winchester Trust.
Completely changing the subject. This letter is from Mike Adams, who's the treasurer of St Cross Simondians Cricket Club. Club needs this support to survive, is the heading. Read Pip Billington's letter of June the 26th, Time We Banned All Bossy Signs. Whilst I have sympathy with the rant over the nanny state causing a visual blight, can I defend the cricket club being ablaze with the advertising of events? The St Cross Cricket Club has to find £50,000 every year to maintain the grounds and buildings it rents from the almshouse of St Cross. Cricket subscriptions make little dent in this figure. Therefore, without events, there would be no cricket at St Cross, nor within Winchester itself. This would affect some 200 under-16s and 6 senior teams. I'm afraid this again shows how little the city does for sport. It is an awful shame. Mike Adams, Treasurer, St Cross Simondians Cricket Club, Enmill Lane, Pitt.
And Liz Eastham, Administrator of the Winchester Basics Bank, expresses gratitude for Basics Bank support. On behalf of the trustees, staff and clients of the Basics Bank, I would like to express enormous gratitude to the residents of Winchester who donated so generously to the recent neighbourhood food collection held at the Tesco Extra store in Winnell. An amazing 200 crates of food were donated over the 3 days, and all of this will directly benefit those in need in the Winchester district. We are indebted also to the team of volunteers who manned the collection point, and were particularly pleased that the team was made up of not just our regular volunteers, but also some of our trustees, as well as staff and clients from some of our partner agencies. Many told me how much they had enjoyed the experience, and several felt moved to hear from donors who had at one time been clients of ours and now happily found themselves in much improved circumstances. This event comes at a critical time of year for the Basics Bank, when our stocks are running low. This would also be a good opportunity to thank all those who donate regularly to our permanent collection points, as well as the parishioners of our local churches who have supported us so loyally over the years. Liz Eastham, Administrator, Winchester Basics Bank.
This one comes from Vivian and Steve Barnes. New homes need the infrastructure. We attended the recent exhibition at King's School, held by Linden Homes, regarding their proposed development at Pitt Vale. Whilst there may be a need for thousands of new homes in the district, not one single additional house should be built until and unless the infrastructure, including roads, schools, hospitals, doctors, etc., is properly considered and appropriate action is taken. We live in Oliver's Battery, where we effectively have one road in and out, the junction of Badger Farm Road, with no traffic signal or roundabout. At certain times of the day, the traffic is so backed up on Badger Farm Road you cannot actually get out of Oliver's Battery. At other times of the day, the traffic on Badger Farm Road moves so fast you literally take your life in your hands and pull out into what may be too small a gap. Everybody who accesses the city from this side of town knows of the already impossible traffic situation in Romsey Road in the mornings and evenings, and particularly when King's School comes out at 3:30. We will soon have the addition of the 200-car park and ride on Pitt Manor, together with 200 houses. Linden Homes are proposing to build a further 500 houses on the land, which will join onto the Pitt Manor development. How can our existing roads possibly cope with such an increase in traffic when they're already so congested? Also, what about schools? If the 700 new homes have an average of 2 children each, this amounts to 1,400 additional school places which need to be found. Oliver's Battery Primary School is full, and the only access is the junction with Badger Farm Road, which causes a problem of its own. We anticipate a long, hard battle with yet another developer, but fear that, as always, the developer will get his way. Yes, maybe we do need the additional houses, but please, Winchester Council, stop and look at the bigger picture before it's too late. Vivian and Steve Barnes, Compton Way, Oliver's Battery.
And thank you all for reading those letters. I think we particularly enjoyed the bacon sandwich. Very nicely read too. So if you have an opinion or a subject you'd like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. Or you can email them on news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. That's all lowercase, no spaces. Or you could write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. And still with the views of local people, your say this week is going to be read by Robin, please.
And for your say this week, the Chronicle asked, with the economy seemingly improving, do you feel better off? David Guy, 20, a barrister from Sparkford Close, said, I suppose it's been a bit better than it has been recently, but then a lot of people have been moaning about not having enough money. I suppose it's a bit easier to get a job now. Helen Brooks, 21, a front-of-house manager of City Road, said, I was a student, and now I'm working full-time and I have money, whereas I didn't before. But in general, I'd say it's better than it was, and I'm spending money more. Ron Lukacs, 64, semi-retired of Springvale Road, Kingsworthy, said, I think there's a problem with the impact the economy is having on the housing market. I don't know how the younger people can get on the ladder to start with. I actually cannot see that the economy is improving that much. Emma Davies Brown, 30, a barista maestro of the Valley Stanmore, said, I do feel less constrained and I'm spending every penny I get on paying my bills. I still cannot afford family holidays and everything goes on my daughter and myself.
Thank you. And we come to editorial comment, and this one is about the new restaurant in Winchester. Oh, well, let's hear what the editor thinks about it. It's good news that another celebrity chef is investing his time, money and talent into Winchester. TV chef Hugh Fearnley Whittingstall was in town this week to get the keys to his almost finished River Cottage eatery at Abbey Mill. Mr. Fearnley Whittingstall accepted the keys from the mayor, Eileen Berry, marking the official handover from the council following months of renovation. Since permission was given, the council has spent £1 million on renovation. River Cottage has said a further £750,000 will have been spent creating its fourth canteen franchise. As Mr. Fearnley Whittingstall said, the council has risen to the challenge of rejuvenating this historic building to the benefit of both visitors and residents alike. Thanks to the hard work of the builders, architects and planning officers, the city will soon have another superb restaurant to add to the many already here. It'll boost the economy and provide at least 35 new jobs too. It's true that near neighbours to the restaurant weren't happy about certain issues at the beginning of the planning process. But let's hope those issues have been resolved and we can all celebrate another feather in the cap for the city. And we have first person now, which Jerry's going to read for us, please.
Which comes this week from Judith Hennigan, and is entitled Learning the Survival Skills for a Carefree Summer. The summer holidays are here, and it's time for the latest Duke of Edinburgh expedition. Out come the sleeping bag, the rucksack, the boots, and six tired-looking packs of Hartley's raspberry jelly, left over from last time but still ready for any emergency. My son spreads his kit across the floor. It's like some dubious hall laid out for the police photograph. Black woolly hat, head torch, a map with handwritten annotations, two heavy-duty bin liners to keep everything dry. Food? I ask, eyeing the ubiquitous packet of Haribo. I mean proper food? My son doesn't even blink. Someone else is organising that. My job's to carry the tent. Then he relents a little. Oh, don't worry, I've got a bag of carrots. Anyway, it's all sorted. It's been sorted for weeks. He's right, of course, so I back away. Over the past 3 years, I've become a huge fan of the Duke of Edinburgh Award Scheme. It's unbelievably well run by some amazing volunteer coordinators and assessors who are calm and organised and cheerful and patient and relaxed, yet eagle-eyed in their negotiations with a motley bunch of teenagers. The leaders I've met both nurture and exemplify a great many life skills, and I am indebted to them. However, alongside the Department of Environment runs a parallel scheme, a rite of passage experience, and this summer's headline act, the Music Festival. For many, the drill is familiar. First, the would-be festival goer must mow enough lawns and do enough babysitting to earn the ticket money, survival skill one. Then he or she must pack a bag of entirely random items bearing no relation to the usual norms of sustenance and shelter, survival skill two. After this, lifts must be negotiated or the festival site arrived at without reference to maps or other directions, survival skill three. Those who make it to the final stages must survive dehydration, sunburn, loss of at least one shoe, no sleep, and find their way home at the end of it all, survival skill four. I do worry a little. Who wouldn't? Things can go wrong sometimes, and warnings pass my lips in muted whispers. Fortunately, my son knows some basic first aid. He knows, he reassures me, that you should never light a barbecue in a tent. Or even the porch of a tent. So clearly the two summer activities are not mutually exclusive. This is best illustrated by a Venn diagram. One side is labelled Duke of Edinburgh Expedition to the Brecon Beacons with full backup and a certificate at the end of it. The other side is labelled Music Festival just outside Basingstoke with no supervision and some temporary loss of hearing at the end of it. The sweet spot is in the middle. Camping with friends. New challenges. Interesting, if uncertain, food sources. A dollop of stamina and a dressing of goodwill. Sorted.
Westminster Diary this week is by George Hollingbury, MP for the Meon Valley. I had an intriguing conversation at my surgery this week. An older gentleman came to tell me that many of his friends were dissatisfied with much about the country and were probably going to vote UKIP. Now, you won't be surprised to hear that this isn't exactly the first time I have had this conversation, but I thought for once I might argue with the basic principles of his assertion. My argument was simply that, from any reasonable point of view, there wasn't too much to be dissatisfied with. I started with the basics and asked the gentleman whether he had a comfortable retirement. Yes, he did. Did he have somewhere to live? Yes. Did he find the NHS looked after him when he needed help? Bar one or two detailed and reasonable points, the broad answer was yes. Was he likely to have lived longer than his parents and grandparents? The answer was that he already had by some margin. Did he feel safe walking the streets? Absolutely. In fact, had he ever been the victim of crime? No, he hadn't been. I could go on with such a recitation, but even he had to admit fairly rapidly that compared with his forebears, his lot was a good one, and certainly when compared to international comparisons, there really was little to complain about. Now, I don't argue that this picture of Britain is the same for all our citizens. It plainly isn't. And we are complacent, particularly those of us representing seats like mine in Meon Valley, if we reach such a conclusion. But the fact is that many of those in this part of the world who are tempted by the nihilistic none-of-the-above choice of UKIP at the ballot box do share a good life. And yet they are tempted to vote UKIP. Which leads me to an inescapable conclusion. The reaction we are seeing is almost completely an emotional one that cannot be argued with by statistics and dry rationality, and that's quite a challenge for politicians. Any response has to engage with deeply held feelings of alienation, of being threatened by change, of old certainties disappearing. But it also has to make the emotional case that things aren't so bad if you sit and think about them for just a moment. The case has to be made in a sympathetic and empathetic way, and if we do this carefully and understanding what people are really complaining about, we might be surprised at the results.
And Claire has two items from Bulgarum and an alternative look at the news, I think, Claire.
Sort of. The heading of the first section is King put in the picture as scouts raise funds. Cubs and scouts from the first Winchester group put their creative talents to the test on Saturday, sculpting a two-dimensional image of King Alfred in the High Street. The sketch of Alfred was laid out on the pavement, and shoppers and visitors were invited to donate coins to enhance the image of the king and enrich the mayor's charity fund. The First Winchester Scout Group is one of four charities supported by Mayor Eileen Berry for fundraising to redevelop their hut in Fleming Road at Week. The Cubs and the Scouts will be busy all this year, said David Kesby, chairman of the Scout Executive Committee. They enjoy everything to do with scouting and are working hard to raise £250,000. The mayor said, "The Scouts did a really good job and are very supportive. Not only did they collect almost £750 for the mayor's charities at the Buttercross, but they accompanied me along the market stalls in the High Street and outside the Brooks Centre, where the traders were extremely generous and donated £100. The fundraising continues this weekend when Otterbourne Flower and Gardening Club stage a flower festival at Abbey House, the official residence of the Mayor of Winchester. It will open on Friday and runs through until Sunday." And the next section is entitled New Plans for Old Passageway. The new plans for the medieval alleyway Cross Keys Passage in the Silver Hill scheme has not yet received much attention. Retaining the narrow pedestrian access was originally a part of the scheme, but Henderson now wants to widen the thoroughfare to increase ease of access to the new scheme, but at the same time destroy the intimate link. A briefing note was given to councillors at the full council meeting last week, saying the narrowness of the passage is relatively recent, dating to the building of the Oxfam shop early in the 19th century. The 1750 Godson map shows the alley was much wider. The Oxfam building itself is not listed and is not considered to have much merit. The note says English Heritage and the council's own head of historic environment both support the creation of an enhanced, historically based Cross Keys Passage. It will mean the end of the city's few remaining narrow alleyways that evoke a feel for the medieval city, along with Royal Oak and Hammond's Passage further up the High Street.
Thank you very much. And we're on to historical items now. And I'm going to start us off with 200 years ago, this day, July the 25th, 1814. And it's a note from very far away from Winchester, Turin, on July the 10th. We are assured that, returning to old usages, the king has prohibited in all his states butchers and others from selling meat on Fridays, Saturdays, and fast days. The sick may, however, procure permission on the prohibited days. Some people assert that this measure was required by the interests of agriculture, so many cattle having been consumed or cut off by epidemics.
100 years ago, July the 25th, 1914. Prisoner not of clear mind. Winchester City Bench. Thomas Ward, labourer, of no fixed abode, was charged with acting as a peddler without having a certificate on Saturday morning. Prisoner was deaf and behaved in an extraordinary manner during the hearing, suggestive of his being not quite mentally balanced. Prisoner said that a police sergeant at Fleetwood had his license, on purpose to write on it a warning that they must take no notice of him. "Germany, England and Turkey," shouted the prisoner, "are all against me, and I stand alone." He appeared to be under the delusion that these countries wanted to assassinate him, and had tried to do so.
50 years ago, July the 25th, 1964. Planning criticism. The New Forest Rural District Council was accused at their meeting on Monday of not using enough foresight in planning residential development. It was reported that the Minister of Housing and Local Government had issued a new certificate of compensation in respect of 8 acres of land at Langdown Lawn, Hythe, which, although scheduled for redevelopment, had not been used. The minister thought that planning permission for residential development on the land could have reasonably been expected, and that a density of 6 houses to the acre would have been appropriate.
25 years ago, July the 21st, 1989. 22 years of the Winchester Ramblers. The Winchester Ramblers celebrated 22 years of rambling with a coach trip to the village of Hambledon and Stoner Park in the Chiltern Valley. The Ramblers started the walk at Mill End, Hambledon. The group split up here, with some of the Ramblers walking the 6 miles to Stoner Park and some staying at the Lock and Weir to watch the boats going through. The group had lunch at Hambledon Village, which dates back to the 16th century. The other walking group had a very pleasant walk up and down through beech wooded slopes. And the second item is water privatisation. Hampshire landowners have helped win a significant improvement in the government's proposals to privatise the water industry. Members of Country Landowners Association throughout the county have been involved in an extensive campaign to persuade the government to change the rights of entry onto private land, which they propose to allow the new sewage and water companies. John Morrish, Regional Secretary of the CLA, explained that the campaign had been aimed at making the PLCS negotiate the right of entry for pipe-laying operations, and a CLA-sponsored amendment to that effect recently won all-party support in the House of Lords.
And staying with historical items, in Chronicles of the past week, this week, there was an item headed Teenagers in the Trenches. This item is accompanied by a photograph of a young lad called Leonard Baker. Before he went to serve in the First World War, he's there sitting on a rustic bench in his First World War Army uniform. The key to this article is that he is aged 15. Receiving a dreaded white feather was considered the ultimate disgrace for any man during the First World War. In August 1914, an organisation called the Order of the White Feather was founded, aimed at shaming men into enlisting in the British Army by persuading women to present them with a white feather if they were not wearing a uniform. Sometimes these white feathers were sent anonymously, which only heaped the feeling of dishonour on the recipient. In the close-knit Hampshire village of Broughton, Leonard Blake, who was just 15, was a member of a well-known local family and a big lad for his age. Somebody, mistakenly thinking Leonard was older than he was, considered he should not be at home but instead fighting for his country, and so sent him a white feather. Leonard's story was retold by 83-year-old John Dawkins, a distant cousin of Leonard, who still lives in Broughton. Leonard was a cousin of my mother. He was only a young boy and came from a large family, said John, who's lived all his life in the village. I suppose someone thought he was older than he was, really, and so sent him a white feather, which must have been a terrible experience back in those days. So Leonard decided to enlist in the army. And, of course, the recruiting sergeants didn't look too closely at the ages of those people joining up. Apparently, Leonard returned home wearing his army uniform to see his family before he was sent off to the front. While he was at home, he had his photograph taken, as he was very proud of his uniform, and then he returned to his unit and went off to fight. Leonard was never seen again. No one really knew what happened to him. He just disappeared without trace, dead, and not even aged 16. All because someone thought he should receive a white feather. The white feather, as a symbol of cowardice, supposedly comes from the days of cockfighting and the belief that a cockerel sporting a white feather in its tail is likely to be a poor fighter. Pure breed gamecocks do not show white feathers, so its presence indicated that the cockerel was an inferior crossbreed. Perhaps the most ironic use of a white feather was when one was presented to Seaman George Sampson, who was on his way in civilian clothes to a public reception in his honour. Sampson had been awarded the Victoria Cross for gallantry in the Gallipoli campaign. And we come now to what's on in the region over the next couple of weeks or so. We're going to start with talks and meetings. On the 31st of July, at the Hampshire Record Office in Sussex Street, there's a meeting on Hampshire's Foreign Secretary, Sir Edward Grey. It starts at 1:15 p.m. and it's a free half-hour lunchtime talk by Piers Burton Page about Britain's Foreign Secretary at the outbreak of World War I and his Hampshire connections. There's no need to book, but it is at the Hampshire Record Office, Sussex Street, Winchester. There's an announcement for us to let you know about of the Open Site Equipment and Information Day. And that's going to be on the 5th of August at Badger Farm Community Centre. That's next to Sainsbury's. Badger Farm Community Centre next to Sainsbury's. It's where open site independent living advisers and equipment demonstrators will be showing their latest low vision aids and equipment. And it's a great opportunity for you to come along and find out information and advice about the services in your area. So that's the Open Site Equipment and Information Day on August the 5th. It starts at 10 o'clock and it goes through to 2 p.m. And you might be interested to come because there will be people there representing the Winchester Talking newspaper. On to days out. Now, there's one here which may interest you and your grandchildren, if you have any, or maybe just you. I know this appeals to me. It's Thomas the Tank Engine. It's a day out with Thomas. And it's going to be August the 9th to the 17th. And it's on the Mid-Hants Railway Watercress Line, as I'm sure most of you know. So just go to a website, and I'm going to give you this now. It's www.dayoutwiththomas.co.uk. That will earn you brownie points with your grandchildren and me. Open gardens. Right, now this is the time of the year. on Monday, every Monday from January the 6th to December the 1st, so we're well in here, the mill at Gordleton, Silver Street, Sway, Lymington. This old mill is a small country hotel, but it has a meandering stream, bisects the garden, and many areas of different character. The mill art walk displays sculptures created by local artists. That is open at 11 a.m. until 4 p.m. Administration is £3, and there are light refreshments to be had. That's the mill at Gordleton, Silverhill, Sway. What else have we got here in Gardens? Oh, Sunday, August the 3rd, Bremont, Bleak Hill, Harbridge, Ringwood. Not a very appealing name, Bleak Hill, but I'm sure the gardens are beautiful because they're 3/4 acre garden brimming with bold, colourful planting and interest. Collections of cacti and carnivorous plants and a small adjacent nursery. That's from 2 to 5:30 p.m. and admission is £3. And there are plants for sale and there are teas. That's Bremore, Bleak Hill, Harbridge, Ringwood. Again on the 3rd of August, Turston in Longstock, Stockbridge. It's secluded and peaceful with views to the River Test and the Hampshire Downs. And you can explore contrasting areas linked by vistas with a theme of circles and ovals. And admission there is £4. That's from 6 p.m. Plants for sale again and teas. And one final one, August the 5th, 10th and 14th. Hill House, Old Orsford. Traditional English 2-acre garden with huge multicoloured herbaceous borders, impressive dahlia bed and butterfly-attracting sunken garden. It has a prolific kitchen garden and it has hens and bantams. That admission is £3.50, opens at 1:30 and closes at 5 p.m. And again, plants are for sale and you can get tea there. That sounds like a lovely range of things to see. And now to theatre on stage. At the Theatre Royal Winchester, there's an intriguing production called The Musical Mashup. I think it's also a workshop, might be interesting to go along. It's on Monday the 28th of July to Friday, August the 3rd. And that's the Theatre Royal box office, is 01962 840 440. At the Mayflower in Southampton, The Lion King is visiting. And that's Saturday, September the 6th to the 3rd of September. No, that can't be right, can it? Let me just read these dates to you. I'm so sorry. I'm not doing this very well. Saturday, September the 6th, Tuesday to Saturday at 7:30. Thursday, Saturday and Sunday at 2:30. Wednesday, the 23rd of July, 27th of August and the 3rd of September at 2:30. I hope you're keeping up. That's The Lion King. Now, the box office there is 023071 1811, and I'm sure if you're interested and you ring, they'll be a lot clearer than I've been. That's a beautiful show, and if you enjoy the music, just go along and take it all in. It's lovely. The Plaza Theatre in Romsey, and they have a 1914 commemorative concert. That's on Monday the 28th of July at 7:30. You can ring the box office on 01794 512 987. That's 01794 512 987. And finally, at Salisbury Playhouse, Oh What a Lovely War, a really appropriate musical show commemorating, if you like to call it that, the First World War. And that's from Monday to Saturday, August the 4th to the 9th at 7:30 and 2:15 p.m. And we have one more regular announcement for you, which is, of course, lighting up times. On Saturday, the 26th of July, the sun will set at 9:01 p.m. And on to Wednesday, the 30th of July, when the sun will rise at 6:27 a.m. and set at 8:55 p.m. And those nights are drawing in, aren't they? In this glorious weather, it's hard to imagine anything other than long, long, lovely sunny days. Please.
This article is headed Silver Hill, affordable homes back on agenda. Winchester civic chiefs want to rethink allowing a developer to scrap providing 100 affordable homes in the £150 million Silver Hill scheme. The policy-making cabinet will now look again at seeking to retain a mix of housing in the major redevelopment. Last Wednesday, at full council, the ruling Conservatives accepted a Liberal Democrat amendment that seeks to retain the 35% affordable housing in the scheme. Council leader Rod Humby said, "As you can see, by us accepting the Lib Dem amendment, affordable housing is a priority for us. We all care about Winchester." In a statement, the developer Henderson said, "We have worked closely with the council over the past 18 months to explore the realities of the investment and development on what is a very expensive city centre site and endorse their request for further time to gather the relevant advice. It has said it will walk away unless it gets its way over dropping the affordable housing, as INI will make the whole scheme unviable." Henderson wants to submit a new application, making major change to a scheme that got permission in 2009. It desires to cut the number of homes from 307 to 184, remove affordable provision and base INI off-site provision on a formula based on the scheme's profit, which is not guaranteed. Remove the bus station, provide a department store, and cut public car parking from 330 to 279, although private spaces will be increased. The decision to rethink will delay the final approval for Henderson to put in its new application. The main Silver Hill critic, Councillor Kim Gottlieb, attempted to get councillors to agree to an external review of the finances of the scheme to double-check the numbers, but his amendment was defeated. Afterwards, he welcomed the rethink on housing, but said his campaign, "Winchester Deserves Better," will continue.
And we move on now to items of general news with Claire, please, starting us off. Thank you.
Silver Hill, affordable homes back on agenda. Winchester civic chiefs want to rethink allowing a developer to scrap providing 100 affordable homes in the £150 million Silver Hill scheme. The policy-making cabinet will now look again at seeking to retain a mix of housing in the major redevelopment. Last Wednesday, at full council, the ruling Conservatives accepted a Liberal Democrat amendment that seeks to retain the 35% affordable housing in the scheme. Council leader Rob Humby said, "As you can see, by us accepting the Lib Dem amendment, affordable housing is a priority for us. We all care about Winchester." In a statement, the developer Henderson said, "We have worked closely with the council over the past 18 months to explore the realities of the investment and development on what is a very expensive city centre site and endorse their request for further time to gather the relevant advice. It has said it will walk away unless it gets its way over dropping the affordable housing, as INI will make the whole scheme unviable." Henderson wants to submit a new application, making major changes in a scheme that got permission in 2009. It desires to cut the number of homes from 307 to 184. Remove affordable provision and base INI off-site provision on a formula based on the scheme's profit, which is not guaranteed. Remove the bus station, provide a department store, and cut public car parking from 330 to 279, although private spaces will be increased. The decision to rethink will delay the final approval for Henderson to put in its new application. The main Silver Hill critic, Councillor Kim Gottlieb, attempted to get councillors to agree to an external review of the finances of the scheme to double-check the numbers, but his amendment was defeated. Afterwards, he welcomed the rethink on housing, but said his campaign, Winchester Deserves Better, will continue. The meeting heard there was disquiet over doing away with the bus station and the way Henderson's plans are evolving. Councillor Sue Nelms, Lib Dem, said, "Why is it Andover can have a new bus station and we can't? What is good enough for Andover should be good enough for Winchester." The meeting heard that Stagecoach says it doesn't want to operate a station in Winchester. Councillor Chris Pines, Labour Group leader, said, "I would hate this new scheme to become a gated community for the wealthy. We have to have an idea of inclusiveness." Lib Dem Robert Hutchison was unhappy to see fewer homes proposed. "We need more people living in the heart of Winchester. This was a golden opportunity." Councillor Martin Todd, Lib Dem, said building affordable homes off-site would be better if it meant more homes could be built. Deputy Council Leader Victoria Weston said, "The scheme has changed for the better since Henderson took it on. They identified shortcomings and have introduced improvements. The scheme will not be a concrete monolith, but would include an elegant mix of flint and local bricks," she said.
Flood damage criteria relaxed in grant scheme. Dozens of Winchester homeowners can now claim money from the City Council for flood damage incurred in February, after the city's MP successfully lobbied the government to relax the application criteria for a national scheme. Residents who lost the use of their sewerage during the rise in groundwater are now able to apply for a DEFRA repair and renew grant of up to £5,000. Until now, cash could only be claimed by those for whom habitable internal areas of the premises have been damaged by flooding. Steve Brine lobbied the Department for Energy and Climate Change after being contacted by disgruntled constituents in recent months. Minister of State Gregory Barker, who visited Winchester in April, wrote to him saying the rules were being changed because people cannot reasonably be expected to live in a property that is not flooded but has no functioning sewerage system. One of those who will benefit is Pelham Warner of North Drive, Littleton, whose septic tank was out of use for 10 weeks this spring. "Groundwater levels were so high, our tank was completely covered and the electric motor immersed. We had to wait for the flooding to subside, then replace the motor," he said. After initially being told he was not eligible for the grant, Mr. Warner and the three other homeowners who share the septic tank are now reapplying to recoup the £2,500 they have spent on repairs. "Without Mr. Brine and our city councillor James Burns, we wouldn't have got anywhere," he added. Winchester City Council says it is expecting to receive more grant applications following the rule change. Mr. Brine said, "I know the extension of the rules around repair and renew grant will be something that will be of use to many of my constituents. It is a very good outcome, but we are definitely not done in this respect. I spoke to the Secretary of State again about the government going further still on the eligibility criteria where septic tanks are not affected, such as where residents spent significant sums of money protecting their neighbours' property during the crisis."
Illegal immigrant tried to kill brother. A Winchester-based taxi driver was savagely attacked by his own brother with a knife in an attempt to murder him. Ayab Khalil has repeatedly refused to explain the reason for the unprovoked attack in Southampton and has been jailed for 14 years. Sanger Khan, a self-employed cabbie, told Winchester Crown Court of the desperate struggle as he tried to fend off Khalil before housemates saved him. Mr. Khan suffered several wounds in the frenzied assault by Ayab Khalil, who is a heavy cannabis user, the trial heard. The six-man and six-woman jury took 3 hours last Wednesday to unanimously convict Khalil of attempted murder. Sentencing, the judge, Mr. Justice Royce, described Khalil as a very dangerous man. He said, "Why you did what you did remains a mystery. When you were a child, Mr. Khan played a prominent part in bringing you up after your father died early. He showed you nothing but kindness and help." Khalil, an illegal immigrant, refused to speak to police, give instructions to his barristers, or evidence at the trial. He did finally concede to his counsel, Matthew Jewell, that he was drunk and had been heavily using cannabis. The court heard that Mr. Khan, who works out of Winchester, is now anxious, scared, and suffers occasional nightmares. The judge said, "He is worried about his brother coming back, even if he is deported, and not knowing why his brother should attempt to kill him. He regards you as a very dangerous person. He fears that if you are released, it will not stop you coming after him, as you've demonstrated the ability to get back into this country, notwithstanding you've been deported." The trial heard Khalil had arrived at Mr. Khan's home in Clovelly Road, St. Mary's, last summer, after time in a detention centre. Nick Tucker, prosecuting, said that as housemates rushed to help, Khalil said, "Let me go, I want to kill him." Mr. Khan said his brother had been acting strangely in the days leading up to the attack, pacing around, talking to himself. He suggested Khalil was angry with him because he had spent time in a detention centre. After the attack, Mr. Khan was taken to Southampton General Hospital and needed several stitches to numerous, mainly superficial wounds. Mr. Tucker said, "The fact that the victim's wounds were not life-threatening was simply fortunate. A psychiatric report said Khalil was not suffering from mental illness." The court heard Khalil, a Pakistani, will be deported on his release from prison. He is also ordered to pay a £120 victim surcharge.
This article is called Savouring the Taste of Hampshire. Some of the county's best chefs and food producers made their way to Sparsholt College last weekend. It was all in the name of good food, as they celebrated the second A Taste of Hampshire Food Festival. There were workshops for all ages to learn about food, its origins and cookery, including demonstrations from Andy McKenzie and Ollie Rouse from Lainston House, Luke Matthews from Chewton Glen and James Golding of The Pig, amongst others. Organiser Philip Holroyd-Smith said, "The sun most certainly shone on Sparsholt on Saturday, and what a day we had, with at least 1,600 people. There were 30 exhibitors, numerous workshops, Hampshire's leading chefs in the cookery theatre, as well as children's activities. It really was a food and drinks fest that celebrated the best of the county. The college's library garden looked beautiful, providing the perfect backdrop. We had plant sales in our horticultural department, and the fish department sold an abundance of trout and barramundi. All in all, a brilliant day for the whole family." And there's a picture here of Nicola Hollier of Martha's Tea Party with her colourful cakes. There's a whopping three-tier Victoria sandwich covered in lots of sweets. There's some chocolate brownies, carrot cake cupcakes. Beautiful.
bid to raise taxes to pay for flooding. A Winchester councillor wants Hampshire residents to pay a levy to help those affected by flooding. After the severe floods, City Councillor Harry Verney has written to the leader of Hampshire County Council, Roy Perry, requesting a one-off tax increase which could raise between £20 to £30 million. He said, "I am sure the public would be sympathetic to those who have suffered already and happily bear the very small extra burden if they felt it would produce some real solutions to the problems which are undoubtedly going to cost money." Councillor Verney raised special concerns about Bramdean, where the A272 was closed for several weeks. He predicted the village would be hit again this autumn. "It's 4 months until Bramdean is flooded again, and the County Council haven't surveyed the drains yet. They promised to do it at the end of April. Absolutely nothing has happened in Bramdean." But Councillor Perry said, "In Hampshire, we are certainly taking steps to help avoid and alleviate as far as possible future floods. We will commit funds to deal with flood measures. We will push for more funding from government to help, but I prefer to go down that route rather than raising taxes." He said, "We have not increased Hampshire's council tax for 5 years. We have the lowest council tax in the South East region, and we owe it to Hampshire's taxpayers to keep it that way."
Hundreds race in charity triathlon. Hundreds of competitors race through the streets of Winchester to support people fighting cancer. A total of 480 people took part in this year's Pedal Paddle Pace triathlon, which raised £30,000 for Macmillan Cancer Care. Mayor of Winchester Eileen Berry started the 20-kilometre cycle race from the Guildhall towards Palmer's Field. Competitors then abandoned their bikes to run 5 kilometres along the Hockley Viaduct before kayaking 2 kilometres along the Itchen Navigation. Since it began 9 years ago, the event, led by a committee of 8 Winchester-based volunteers, has raised £100,000 for the charity. Committee member Blair Dixon said, "This is an event that has gone from strength to strength. There have been more people this year than previous years, and it's a fantastic cause. It's turning into a family event now, and although it's billed as a fun event, it is competitive." Sarah Davis was named the fastest woman for the second consecutive year, finishing 1 hour 14 minutes, 3 minutes faster than last year. The fastest man was Hugh Stiles, finishing in 1 hour 6 minutes, and the fastest team was Heads Resourcing, and there are 4 very jolly photographs of people paddling and pacing, but none of them pedalling.
Station for the Future is now open. New facilities at Winchester Railway Station have been officially opened. The £3.7 million improvement scheme includes a new double-decked open-air car park and a glass and brick over-rail bridge, complete with lifts for disabled passengers and parents travelling with young children. Tony Potter of the Department of Transport said, "I think it's excellent. It's a real accomplishment for the stakeholders and the passengers. It's made a real difference and it's a station for the future." Sam McCarthy, Commercial Director for the South West Trains Network Rail Alliance, said, "We would like to thank the Department for Transport for their support in driving forward these improvements, which will make a huge difference to the 4.5 million passengers using Winchester Station every year. The works mean the capacity for the car park has increased by 20% and there are 113 extra spaces. The response we've had indicates it's easing congestion around the town centre." Steve Bryan, MP for Winchester and Chandler's Ford, said, "I'm really pleased with these improvements. When I first got elected, we had a station where disabled travellers had to get a taxi from one side to the other, and I raised this in Parliament as we bid for government money under the Access for All scheme that has funded the new footbridge and lifts. This is about access for all people.
Local brewery is set to sponsor Oktoberfest. A brewery near Winchester is set to become the sponsor for this year's Hampshire Oktoberfest. Upham Brewery has agreed to a title sponsorship for one of the county's biggest annual consumer shows, which will be held in Basingstoke. The festival takes place from October the 3rd to the 5th at Basingstoke Sports and Social Club. The event, expected to attract 12,000 visitors, offers over 200 beers along with various food and cider producers. There will be a full programme of demonstrations, exhibitions, craft workshops, as well as live music and children's activities. Faye Payne, Sales and Trade Marketing Manager at Upham Brewery, said, "Hampshire's Oktoberfest is a key date in the county's diary and a beacon event for beer and food producers across the region, as well as being very much recognised for its live music. Hampshire is our heartland, so Upham Brewery is hugely proud to put its support behind Oktoberfest, and we look forward to welcoming everyone to what will be a fun and exciting event." As part of the sponsorship agreement, Upham's three staple ales, Tipster, Punter and Steaks, will be served in both the main marquee, and it has its own marquee, which will host a series of live music acts. The brewery has also produced special Oktoberfest beer mats to promote the event within its pubs closest to the venue, such as the Running Horse near Winchester and the Bunk Inn near Newbury.
"No business plan, no grant," seller is told. "I don't need a business plan. I want to live to 100 and make £1 million. Those were the words of 66-year-old Winchester resident Terry Young, who is angry that the City Council have thrown out his application for a £1,000 business start-up grant. The ex-military man sells silk flowers on the streets of Winchester from a dust cart and applied for the money to replace his 20-year-old three-piece suit, which he wears every day on the job, complete with a top hat and purple velvet bow tie. He said, 'They asked me, what's your email address? I said, I don't have one. What's your business plan? I don't have one. What's your Facebook page? I don't have one. I don't need all these modern things. I'm just on the street, in your face, and selling my roses. I'm reliable, but they won't help me because I don't have a business plan. What is a business plan, anyway?' Mr. Young spent £700 on the new cart and said he could only afford it with the help of Winchester Litter Pickers and Winchester BID, whom he says both donated £350. Jeremy France Jewellers and the Baker's Arms both advertise on the cart. Mr. Young added, "I understand where the council are coming from, but they could be a bit more flexible." A city council spokesman said, "The council needs to be fair to all applicants, ensure that council taxpayers' money is used to best effect, and maintain a transparent business process for determining grants. A business plan is an important element for the potential business and for the council as the grant maker." He added, "This applicant has received support from officers, councillors and the BID in terms of advice and help to get his business moving. He has not been successful in his grant application on this occasion, but that's not to say he will not be in future." And there is a photograph of Mr. Young in his three-piece suit and his top hat and his purple velvet bow tie. And, do you know, he doesn't look as though he needs a new suit because he looks incredibly smart.
I think that squashes my ideas of appealing for a new suit under a business grant. Thank you very much, everyone, for those. And that concludes the Hampshire Chronicle extracts for this week. And a reminder to you that Irene Dowding is the person to call if you have any problems with your recording. Her number, I'll give you again, is 01962 870370. 01962 870370. And we say again thanks to our editors, Gordon and Liz, and also to our hard-working copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. Thank you also to our readers, Claire.
Bye.
Robin.
Bye.
Jerry.
Bye.
And from me, Roz, goodbye. Would you please put the memory stick in the wallet when you've finished with it and return it to us as soon as possible? And please put the address label inside the wallet. Have a very good week, enjoy what's left of our wonderful summer, and thank you for listening.